From KMXT in Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Jay Barrett. Coming up this week, there are renewed concerns about mine waste pollution in Southeast, as well as worry over the invasive green crab showing up one day soon. All that, and it's the last fishery for one longtime biologist. Coming up on the Alaska Fisheries Report.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. 1-800-992-4960 or online at alaskaboat.com.
The second summer troll opening for king salmon in Southeast Alaska is finally over. The 22-day opening was the second longest on record for the fishery, which is scheduled by the Department of Fish and Game only after it's gotten a handle on the number of fish landed during the first summer troll opening on July 1st. And it's highly variable. Last year, for instance, there was no second opener for kings at all. In 2012, the second opener went on for 29 days. Troll management biologist Patty Scannis runs the numbers for the department. She expects that trollers would mop up the 73,000 king salmon remaining in this year's quota a lot faster than 22 days based on the success of the first five-day opener in July. But the fishing started out slow in August and only got worse.
Catch rate started off at about an average of 15 per boat per day. And during the last week, the average catch per boat per day was only 10.
Part of the problem may have been the weather, which Scannis says favored bigger boats this year. The best salmon fishing is typically offshore. August was not a very inviting month to be on the ocean. Scannis says many trollers stayed tied up.
One thing that we noticed that was very different was that not only did we count fewer permits when we did our aerial surveys than we expected, but that when we looked at the actual days fished during the opening, it was surprisingly low. We had a lot of bad weather, and I know that that affected how many days people fished and whether they fished at all.
She says that when all the fish tickets are in, trollers will have landed about 74,000 kings. That puts the catch to date for kings in Southeast over 176,000. Prices for king salmon have climbed steadily over the summer. Trollers were earning $5 per pound in July for fish weighing a little over 11 pounds. The average weight is now just over 12 pounds, and the price in the last week of fishing jumped to just under $9 per pound. Scannis expects trolling for silver salmon to continue through the expected close of the season on the 22nd. At 8 pounds, coho are a pound heavier than the 10-year average for the species.
We've got some, you know, extra-large fish out there, and trollers tell us that they're just beautiful, very high quality.
The silver salmon have been bringing $1.88 a pound at the dock, and chum, though a far cry from the huge runs of a decade ago, are still biting. Trollers have landed 17,500 of them in Sitka Sound this summer, fishing only one day a week, in turn with seiners and gillnetters. The next king salmon accounting year starts with the opening of the winter troll fishery on October 11th, but Scannis won't be in charge. She's retiring at the end of September after nearly 40 years working in Southeast fisheries. Nevertheless, she'll probably still have salmon on the brain.
I'll probably always be thinking about fishing and fish and trollers, and, you know, you don't just stop thinking about it, and I imagine I still will be.
Scannis and her husband plan to move south following her retirement. The name of her successor and the next manager of Southeast Alaska's troll fisheries has not yet officially been released.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by AK Teach, now enrolling K-12 homeschool students throughout the state of Alaska, creating partnerships that are flexible, family-friendly, and unique to your child. More information is available at AK Teach or at 907-942-0667.
Recently, an invasive marine crustacean known as the European green crab was found in Puget Sound. But as KSDK's Aaron Bolton tells us, from Wrangell, green crab populations are already establishing themselves on the coast north of Seattle.
Alaska Fish and Game Invasive Species Coordinator Tammy Davis says the green crab found in Puget Sound last week isn't a concern for Southeast Alaska.
The finding in Puget Sound is concerning to Puget Sound. That doesn't concern me as much as the detection of new green crab populations further north along the coast of British Columbia.
The crab is native to the Northeast Atlantic Ocean and has established itself all over the world.
They've spread around the world to a number of different locations, including both the east and west coast of North America, Patagonia, Australia, Tasmania, South Africa as well.
That's Sean McDonald, a research scientist for the University of Washington. He says these invaders were found in San Francisco Bay in 1989 and have been moving farther north ever since. Its northbound movement is a concern for two reasons. It populates areas quickly, and it's an extremely efficient predator.
And when they reach high densities, when you pack a lot of crabs into a small space and they're all looking for food, they can be a little bit destructive.
They dig holes searching for food in marshes, eelgrass beds, and can decimate populations of clams, snails, and other small organisms.
And those impacts could cascade through our local ecosystem because these pocket estuaries and marsh habitats are also very important nursery grounds for a lot of other animals and important fly stopover areas for migrating birds. So you can see where impacts to these habitats could actually have profound impacts to the overall ecosystem if left unchecked.
Eelgrass beds provide habitat for juvenile salmon and other wildlife in Southeast, such as waterfowl and shellfish. Fish and Game's Davis says the crab's progress is actually much closer to Southeast than Puget Sound.
And so, you know, green crab have been known to inhabit outer Vancouver Island inland waters for years. And it's just in the past few years that they've moved up in, or just been detected up in Fish Egg Inlet and places along that in Queen Charlotte Sound.
Davis learned from the Department of Fisheries and Oceans Canada this summer that an established population was found in Higgins Passage between Prince and Swindle Islands, about 240 miles south of Metlakatla. Populations are finding their way north during their larva stage, carried by ocean currents and transported by fishing and shipping vessels. Davis says if a population was detected in Southeast waters, Fish and Game would attempt to eradicate them.
Well, we have a response kit located in Ketchikan, and we have one here in Juneau. And what we would attempt to do is trap them out.
She says baited traps would be set during low tide cycles. Thomas Terrio, a research scientist for Fisheries and Oceans Canada, says it experimented with the same approach on Vancouver Island, but without success.
But we haven't been able to deplete a crab population. We've been able to shift the age structure and composition of the population, but we haven't been able to knock it out completely.
He says the more remote locations like Higgins Passage make it even more difficult to mitigate populations. Currently, British Columbia isn't trapping the crabs in Fish Egg Inlet or Higgins Passage, making Davis nervous about the future. The Smithsonian oversees a monitoring program on the Pacific coast and in Southeast. Several environmental, state, and federal agencies participate in that program. Davis says they currently trap in search of green crab in Ketchikan and Sitka during the summer months. She says if anyone sees unusual species or plants, they can always send a picture to Fish and Game's Invasive Species Department or call the hotline. Reporting in Wrangell, I'm Aaron Bolton.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their family. AMSEA at AMSEA.org or 907-747-3287.
The company that had planned to reopen a controversial Southeast mine upriver from Juneau is shutting down. That means polluted water could continue to drain from mine tunnels into the Taku River, but there are disagreements over what, if any, damage could result. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld tells us more.
Toronto-based Chieftain Metals has been trying to reopen the historic Tulsiquitchief mine for about 6 years. The zinc, copper, and gold mine is in northwest British Columbia, about 20 miles from the Alaska border. It's next to a waterway that drains into the Taku River near the capital city. Biologists call it one of Southeast Alaska's largest salmon-producing watersheds. But a major investor wants its debt repaid. Chieftain Metals doesn't have enough money to do it, so it's going into receivership, which can lead to bankruptcy.
What it means for the Taku watershed is the pollution is likely to continue.
Chris Zimmer is Alaska campaign director for Rivers Without Borders. It's one of a number of groups critical of mines and exploration projects along British Columbia rivers that flow into Alaska.
When this mine was abandoned in 1957, no reclamation was done. And so since for almost 60 years, we've had acid mine drainage, which is very toxic to aquatic critters, flowing right into the Taku out of this mine with really unabated, without any reasonable attempt at cleanup that actually worked.
British Columbia regulators required Chieftain to reduce that pollution when it was solvent. The company built a plant, but said it was too expensive to operate without the mine opening and generating revenue. Whether that acidic water and dissolved metals are a serious threat to salmon is disputed. A number of environmental, tribal, municipal, and fishing groups say it is. They point to a study estimating 15 tons of metals leach into the Taku watershed a year. But a 2014 report released by mine developers says it's not enough to cause problems, and a state report issued 2 years earlier says concentrations in fish tissue are below federal requirements. That study's been expanded and redone. Jackie Timothy is Southeast Regional Supervisor for the State Department of Fish and Game's Habitat Division.
We received more money from the legislature to continue to investigate the metals concentrations in resident fish tissues at the mine and then above the mine and below the mine. And we've completed that work. And we're just now in our peer review of our publication, which should be available within the next month.
British Columbia's mining regulators could not be reached for immediate comment, but Lieutenant Governor Byron Mallott recently shared portions of an email committing the province to further research the discharge's impact on aquatic life. It says that information will, quote, provide a foundation for next steps. Transboundary mine critic Zimmer says that's not good enough.
If BC and its mining companies can't operate or clean up the Tulsiquitchief in a way that doesn't threaten the Taku, I mean, how can we have any confidence that much bigger mines like KSM, like Red Chris in the Unic and in the Stikine, can be operated as well without threatening our water quality and fisheries downstream?
Chieftain Metals officials did not respond to phone and email requests for comment. But a press release posted on its website confirms the company is in receivership. This is Ed Schoenfeld reporting in Juneau.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
And that's all for this edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help this week from KCAW's Robert Woolsey in Sitka, KSTK's Aaron Bolton in Wrangell, and Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Jay Barrett.